Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Lean Keys, Real Talk, back with another episode. This is number 81. 81 episodes of everything we've been wanting to talk about, and it's been wonderful. 2019's off to a good start. We're going to break it down tonight and talk a couple things that's on our mind. Lee, what's going on, my brother?
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Episode 81. You know, normally I dedicate the show, start the show with a dedication. So I'm going to start dedicate the show to Terry Owens, who used to wear number 81, one of the greatest receivers to ever do it in the NFL. And also I want to dedicate it to my Aunt Brenda, who passed away January 2nd. You know, rest in paradise. I love you. I'll be coming home this weekend, this week to send her home and see my family. So, hey, let's get it going, Keys.
Hey, first of all, I'm sorry to hear that, my brother. Sorry for your loss.
Oh, that's all. That's, you know, it came as a shock. Just dealing with my family and stuff like that, making sure we get everything okay. But, you know, life goes on, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Family's important. We'll jump right into it. You know, I had something that's been on my mind. I'm gonna bring it out there because earlier on Twitter, there's not as many events to talk about right now because, you know, me and you, I don't think are all too interested in the, first of all, they canceled the UFC 233, so that kind of takes away, and then I don't know that me or you are all that interested in the fight night, you know, with the TJ Dillashaw and Cejudo. So I know we're probably not going to talk about that, so we'll just kick that right off the stool right there. And then, you know, there's a couple other events, but we'll get to it.
But you know what, though? If it was TJ and DJ, definitely give it some talk, because with TJ being probably one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in MMA, then, you know, with TJ being, a two-time bantamweight champ, you know, we would talk about it, but you know, with the flyweight division going away, it just doesn't make sense to have this fight. So that's why we ain't talking about it, man. But go ahead.
because being that they wanted to get rid of the division, it's kind of lame to even look at it. It's like, oh, what's the division lie on if Cejudo can beat Dillashaw? So if he wins, then they're going to keep the division going. But if he loses, the thing I don't understand about this is that even if you did have that kind of stipulation, if he were to win and keep the division going, I still feel like that doesn't make any sense, because I'm pretty sure the reason why they're getting rid of the division was because it's the least draw out of any division in the UFC, sad to say. And especially now that Demetrius Johnson has moved to one championship, that gives people even less of a reason to give a care about the flyweight division. I never hear anybody talking about any flyweight fights, to be honest with you. I mean, I know probably a handful of them, but that's it. I think Dustin Ortiz is a flyweight. I really like him. I saw him fight when I was at the UFC Boston show. And there's a couple other good guys over there. I mean, of course they have talent, but it's just there's just not much fan interest in it. And the UFC doesn't need to keep a division going that isn't going to sell them tickets, because at the end of the day, it is a business and they need to be able to generate revenue from the divisions. And if they can't, then I think it makes perfect sense to just get rid of the division and try and start something else. So, I don't know. But aside from that, the thing that I wanted to talk about tonight was this. I was talking to somebody on Twitter earlier today, or was it yesterday? And I had said that MMA Junkie, the website MMAJunkie.com, had ran a poll. Yeah, this was earlier today. MMA Junkie ran a poll, and they had three fights on there. And they were all, like, fights that haven't happened. It was like, you know, if you only had to pick one fight, which one of these would you want to see in 2019? And I believe it was – the choices were Jones and Cormier 3, Khabib and McGregor 2, or Cyborg and Nunes 2, and then the option D was other, you know, enter your own if you had a different option you wanted to pick. So that one, I responded to MMA Junkie, and I just said, you know, if being that you gave a poll with these three options, I feel like you that means you wanted to see what people would choose if it had to be these three options, because all three of those fights do have some kind of demand or are being talked about and speculated at this time. So I made a pick based on if I had to, but really I answered another one that I wanted to see more than all three of those possibilities, and that was, you know, McGregor and Poirier 2. That's the one that I want to see. If there'd be a rematch of anybody, that's the rematch that I want to see. It's definitely Poirier and McGregor 2. And if not that, I'd probably want to see probably McGregor and Holloway, too. That'd be the other rematch that I'd want to see. Those other three ones don't really move the needle with me too much. I'm not really – I mean, if I had to pick one of those three, I'd probably have to go with Khabib and McGregor, too, because I feel like Jones and Cormier 3, there's just no need to have that fight. I already explained this before, and I'm not even going to – you know, use up time to explain it again, but I just have little to no interest in that fight. The guy doesn't need to move up to heavyweight to prove anything. He's already beaten everybody in his division, something that Cormier never did. He never cleared out the light heavyweight division. He beat like two or three guys, so I don't even want to hear about that. And the other thing is that the Cyborg and Nunes is cool, but at the same time, is like I'm really not in any rush to see it. You know, I really don't mind. It seemed like Amanda Nunes wasn't really too interested in that rematch. I mean, why would you be that interested with the way that you stopped a really dominant champion who was undefeated for like 10-plus years? I think it was like 12 or 13 years or something like that. I think actually it might have even been 16 years that she was undefeated. So stopping somebody like that in the first round, I don't really see why Nunes would be all too enticed to have a rematch with Cyborg, somebody who she basically just dominated. But yeah, I had end up having a talk with somebody on Twitter, you know, off the strength of what I had said, you know, in response to MMA Junkie. I said, you know, I'd want to see none of those three fights really. I'd want to see Poirier versus Conor McGregor too. That's the rematch I want. And then somebody had responded to me saying that they like that fight, but they'd rather see McGregor and Max Holloway too. Now this comes down to the thing that I want to talk about is not really so much about whether each fight happens or which one that we want to see. It more comes down to what each match means for the UFC in 2019. Because in 2018, in the era of the super fight, where everybody wants to see a super fight, basically, you know, you could say we're probably in the super fight era right now, where that's all really people request is just all these dream matchups, which is, I get it. But look, the thing is this, is that if you have Poirier versus McGregor 2, that's a contender fight. That's basically a title eliminator fight. But at the most raw, at the very brink of it, that is a contender fight where you would just have two top guys at the lightweight division going at it. That's what I want to see more of in 2019 is more contender fights. Now, if you were to have Conor McGregor versus Max Holloway 2, that to me is a super fight. Now, the reason I say it's a super fight is because Max Holloway is a featherweight champion. McGregor was the lightweight champion, but now he's just a lightweight contender. But he was the featherweight champion before. McGregor beat Jose Aldo once, you know, in 12 or 13 seconds, okay. But then again, Max Holloway has beaten Jose Aldo twice in, you know, rather dominant fashion. And it's a super fight because he would have to move up to 155. And you'd have him move up there to fight Conor McGregor. So that, to me, the energy, the high energy that would come in, it would come in with that kind of rematch being announced. That is definitely a super fight to me. But the reason why I think I'd want to see it, but I don't want to see it before I want to see McGregor in contender fights at lightweight, because I'd rather see. Let us start with that trend in 2019. Instead of every time a guy becomes a champion, you're asking him to move up in weight. How come every time a guy becomes a champion now, you want them to move up in weight? Why can't they just defend the belt in their division? It's like so annoying. Like the fact that everyone's saying Max Holloway's got to move up to 155 is kind of getting old, man. I'm getting annoyed with hearing that, because explain to me why he's going to move up to 155. I mean, he just became the champion. He just became the champion, I believe, in 2017 of the featherweights. And he just had his second title defense at 145. All he did is he won the belt from Aldo, which is a big achievement. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he hasn't really done a lot in the division as a champion. So why are you saying he has to move up to 155? He fought Aldo. He defended the belt against Aldo again. That's one title defense. And he just fought Brian Ortega. That's two. The man's only had two title defenses. Why can't he keep on fighting these contenders at 145? Now everybody wants him to move up to lightweight. Every time a guy becomes champion, you want them to move up. I don't understand why. Let somebody defend the belt. Whatever happened in the days of where the champion would just fight the number one contender? Nowadays, there's all this drama. It either has to be, move up in weight or go make this super fight with this guy, or this guy's popular, so you should fight him. This guy's talking trash, so you should fight him. What about the number one contender? I'd like to see some champion versus number one contender fights. That's what I'd like to see in 2019. And I think one of the ways we can start with that is by having Khabib fight Tony Ferguson next. Instead of having Khabib, GSP, or fighting Khabib and Conor McGregor too, or Khabib and some other, person that they want to put in there. Why not have Khabib and Ben Askren? That's what I was looking for. Instead of having all these super fight names, why not have Khabib fight Tony Ferguson, the number one contender? No, I think these types of ideas are the ways that we can start 2019 off on the right foot and lead the UFC into the right direction and steer away from the super fight era a little bit, because it's getting old. I would have liked to see Michael Bisping having fought Robert Whittaker at that time, but we end up seeing Bisping fight GSP. But then what happened? All he did was drop the belt, and GSP didn't want to fight the contenders. Because you know why? All these guys want is super fight and the money fight. But I think, I speak for a lot of us in the community of avid viewers who watch a lot of these events and watch all the events regardless of what fights are booked and how much hype there is or all that stuff. And I think I speak for a lot of us when I say there's a lot of champion versus number one contender fights that we want to see. So I think stop it with all the super fights. Wow, how do you feel about that, bro?
Before you
go with that, speaking of which, we got a caller on the line too. I'm going to jump this person into the call and see what they have to say about this topic. Hey, hello, who we got out there? Anybody on the line? All right, we'll let that one go for a second. Lee, how do you feel about that?
Well, man, I feel like this. Well, that poll that you had, that poll that MMA Junkie had, I don't care for any of those fights, because I'm just thinking that John versus DC3 really doesn't need to happen. Nunez versus Cyborg 2, that don't really need to happen right now. And the other one was McGregor and who? McGregor and Khabib.
It was Khabib. Yeah.
Yeah, if Conor isn't, really training and working on his ground game, then you just going to see the same fight again. So I really don't want to see any of those. I think I'm more on the line with you. I'd rather see, Khabib versus Tony. I wouldn't mind seeing John Jones versus Luke Rockhold this year. And another fight that just actually came up earlier this week on the Area Hawani show is I wouldn't mind seeing Anthony Smith fight Luke Rockhold. out five at Walmart. I mean, I'm just saying. The UFC needs to get back to the old days, man, where the champion did fight the number one contender. And that's what made the UFC popular in my eyes, is because you got the fights you wanted to see and you got the fights that needed to happen. You got the number one contender normally fought the champion after the champion fought somebody, and that's how it normally went. But now, with all the events they be having and, you know, having the, all these obligations is I don't think they really respect the rankings anymore, you know. I think they set fights around time frames. But at the same time is now, I think with them being on ESPN now, I think we'll probably get back to the old way of where you had a champion fight number one contender, because ESPN is definitely a sports station and a sports franchise, and I think they'll probably have the UFC respect the rankings and probably make fights according to the rankings. But you know, that's to be determined down the road. At the same time, you know, there are a lot of new fighters out there. And, you know, they have to learn to navigate through the rankings to earn title shots. Just because you win two fights in a row, that doesn't automatically qualify you for a belt. How about, you know, you beat the guy in front of you, then you move up, you beat the guy in front of you, then you move up, you beat the guy in front of you. You got to keep building towards a championship, not fighting and talking your way towards a championship. And I think that's where the UFC is at right now, is guys feel like if they talk enough trash and get enough of a following, then that entitles them to a title shot, and it should.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, I think one thing that that goes wrong with that. Hold on, I want to check this. There's still somebody on the line. I want to check if this person's there or not. Hey, we got somebody on the line still? Anybody?
Yep. Yo, what's going on?
How you doing
you
today?
Who we
got?
I'm doing good. How about yourself? What's that? My name's
pretty
Will.
Pretty good, pretty good. Nice to meet you, Will.
Western North Carolina.
Okay, what part of North Carolina?
North Carolina, okay.
We're right near Asheville, west. My mom lives out in Charlotte, but I live west in the mountains.
All right, man. I used to be stationed with a guy that's from Asheville. I used to be stationed down at Pope Air Force Base down in Fayetteville.
Right on. Okay, nice.
Is this electric system?
Electric Resolve system, yeah.
Yeah, I knew I missed a word in the middle. I'm sorry about that. Good to talk to you, bro.
No, it's all right. So, yeah.
Did you happen to catch? I think you're both right.
Yeah, I've been listening. I think the whole time both of you guys make good points. I think you're talking about the super fight thing versus the championship fight thing, and here's what this is. You figure the way they built themselves into Fox, they've been having to pull numbers to be able to translate over, like, and transcend to, like, ESPN. So this is why this whole super fights thing came about. They have to put up the numbers, okay? And this is why they've gotten where they're at. I like what Lee was saying, though, about, like, maybe ESPN will balance them back out and, like, push it back. But that's hard to say, though. I mean, they could keep with this because at the end of the day, it's the pay-per-view numbers that are making the big money. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
it's a crummy thing, man. I don't like it. Like, I think the same thing. Let's see the number one contender. You're crapping on these guys, man. And especially you think about, like, the dudes that are coming up, like, they're in their prime or they're close to it. And then you're just going to, like, make them wait so-and-so can fight so-and-so because, oh, we want to make the big bucks or whatever. I think what they need to do is figure out a better way to pull a fan base. And I think they should do something with the pay-per-view cost to make more people want to buy it. Like, one of the things I was talking about recently was, like, why not, like, do, like, full price purchase, you know, full purchase price for pay-per-view, but also, like, be able to buy just the co and main event for a lesser price, you know, still
that's
make
what,
some money.
That's what man Key said.
That's
yeah,
a good
like
idea.
Said.
I mean, yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, like, because you're, like, there's a huge bracket, okay, because here's the thing, like, people like us, I've been doing this since, like, 1998 when I was in, coming right out of high school, or, like, 97, really, like, I went and got, like, a UFC VHS, at a video store across from me, like in the shopping center. And like I was like, me and my little brother were like, yeah, you know, we used to watch Vitor Belfort beat up Scott Ferozzo, and we're just like, yeah, the little guy won, you know, like we were like, so into it. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like we were like, yeah, get him, you know, like we where we lived is like we dealt with a lot of crap, and it's like, yeah, it's like, yeah, we're like, we feel like this like vicarious victory for through Vitor Belfort or whatever, right? So, and I didn't, I kind of moved away from it a little bit just because of life, but then, like, about the time they were trying to push the Randy and Chuck fight, like, I was a Fairweather fan then, you know what I mean? Like, the whole time I was a Fairweather fan. I would check in where I could, but then when about the time they were really pushing, when it was Chuck and Tito, and, like, Tito was dodging Chuck, supposedly, and all this, and then when they were pushing the Randy fight, like, I really got back into it, and ever since then, man, I've got, like, a ton of UFC DVDs. I've subscribed to Fight Pass the whole time. For a little while I checked in with MMA Weekly, and the guy running that, Ken, what's his name? Ken, I can't remember. The last name is Casey, and I've been drinking a little bit of bourbon. But like in about 2003, I checked in with him and was like, this guy, these MMA writers they had were just like full of shit. Like, boo, 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 excuse me if I'm not supposed to curse, but this guy just popping off, and he said something about the first Rampage Chuck fight in Pride that Rampage knocked him out, and I was like, wait, so I emailed the editor, and I said, hey, that's not true. I was like, they threw in Chuck's corner, threw in the towel. I was like, who are you got? You guys, this is like the third time I've been reading your articles, and these guys are just popping off and saying things, and it seems to me like they're just reading statistics or reading results and not like they didn't actually watch the fight. And so this guy let me write a couple of op-eds, and I was so excited. I was still a little young, though. It was like about, I think, like 2004. And I'm sitting there, and this was the time when the boxing pundits were like, oh, you know, there's no way MMA will ever be anything or this or that.
Yep, exactly.
And like just talking trash about it. And I can't remember the guy's name, but there was a dude – and he was popping off on MySpace and on a couple other mediums, and I just like went at this guy sideways, and I was like, "You're an idiot." I was like, "And this is why you're an idiot." Boxing is on the downturn. This is a more vicious sport. You know what I mean? Like, this is something you like when you think about the Roman Colosseum. You think people are always just want to see just this with these rules, and these guys have to catch on to people being head kicked and kneed in the face and picked up and slammed and all the rest of this, and there's all these different ways that a fight can end. You can be choked unconscious. You don't think that the mainstream's not going to be like, yeah, and this is the new Roman Colosseum for those that want it. And this guy came back at me, and, I mean, I just went back and forth with this guy. And I went on, and I sent an email to the editor of the MMA Weekly, and I was like, yeah, I totally trashed this guy. And then after that, the guy totally stopped emailing me and like stopped responding to me. And this is like a big life lesson for me. I was like, man, I should have not been such a gung-ho idiot, you know? But I mean, that's how far I go back with it. And it's like, when I look at like, nobody cried foul when all these fighters started hurting themselves. You know, I was like yelling like, hey, what the hell is going on with this? This never used to happen. There was not like, oh, so-and-so. There was like, I think Guy Metzger hurt himself one time in like the first like 10 years where it was really kind of getting some traction. I think, yeah, it was Guy Metzger hurt himself. And then that was like a fight called off about that. But there was never any of that. It's like, and then like now like it's taking off and there's all these things, all these different things that are happening to the sport. And you like go like, and then here we are, we've come to these super fights. Like, come on.
But that's the reason why I think guys are injured more now than back then, because I think guys they'll fight maybe once or twice a year. So basically, you only training what maybe about 16 weeks a year. So basically, you open yourself up to being injured because your body isn't doing the repetition that it's supposed to do. And back then, you know, guys fought three or four times a year. It was nice to see a champion fight three times a year, three or four times a year, depending on, you know, the way the maybe they fought January, then again in March, then again in the summer, then again in the wintertime, you know, something like that. But guys now, you lucky to see a champion fight two times, three times a year. And
well, you know, also, like, you see some of these other guys is, like, maybe you think it's a little watered down, like, where maybe it's, like, some of these guys can't afford to, like, pay for the training. Or, I mean, it's, I don't know, I just, it just seems convoluted to me that, like, we didn't used to have all the injuries, and now, dude, like, my thought, first initial thought was, like, maybe people are going too hard. They're trying to do too much too soon, and they're, like, running it too hard. Like maybe their training regimen is too much. Maybe they're running too many miles and then coming in and doing something immediately. And then, oh, yeah, because you hear this, like, oh, he blew his knee out or he pulled his hamstring or – it just seems to me that the guys didn't used to do that.
I know me and Keys have talked about this on a previous show. And if you just go and look at the UFC schedule just for the first quarter of this year, the number of events they have is way too many right now. You know what
I
mean?
I think so.
We just had a time where there was 6 weeks work for UFC events, back to back to back to back to back. You really don't need to do that. You could have. I know my idea was this. You know, WWE, they have one pay per view a month. I want to say it's one pay per view a month or one every other month or something like that. But the thing is, you could have a fight night, and then have a pay per view. And then you just take a couple, you probably take 2 or 3 weeks off, have another fight night, have another pay-per-view. That way, you're giving the fans something free, but you're also building up an awesome card on the pay-per-view to justify this $60 I'm going to spend or this $70 I'm going to spend, depending on if I get an HD or not. And then you give people like us something to talk about in between. You know, we get something to talk about. We can talk about, I wouldn't mind seeing this fight. What's going to be next on what's going to happen towards the end of the year as far as fights and stuff like that. And plus, if you do it that way, you'll have more guys that can fill in if somebody does get injured. You don't have to, pull somebody from the card because they can't find an opponent. Right now, that's the biggest thing with most of our cards. It's like we hoping that nobody gets injured before the card because normally everybody else is booked and they already training for another fight. So, I think the UFC could do it. I mean, I know you got to strike while the fire is hot, and right now the UFC is a hot commodity. But at the same time, it won't hurt you to slow it down a little bit. Pump the brakes a little bit on all the events. You know, you do a fight night, and then maybe 2 weeks later, you do a pay-per-view, or you do a fight night, and then the next weekend, you do a pay-per-view. And for people like us, we'll see more quality cards that way. But idea that I had is, you know, fight nights could be used to promote the guys ranked 10 through 15, 10 through 16, you know, the new guys, you know, give them a platform to showcase their skills. And also, it brings in people like us that are true fans of the sport. We get to see the new blood develop. You know, we get to see them come up the ranks and, you know, see what, you know, what kind of changes they're making in their game and stuff like that. You know, to be a better fighter. But the UFC, I just want them to slow down a little bit, churn out better fight cards, and still promote your younger guys and girls. So that way that when somebody come up, it don't seem like they came out of nowhere. You know, like Thiago Santos. It seemed like he came out of nowhere. And I do watch as much UFC as I can, but I didn't even know he fought four times last year until my man Keith came to my attention.
I didn't. I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
It seemed like he came out of nowhere, but I usually look back. I'm a statistics guy, and when I look back, I realize, like, wow, this guy fought 5 times this year. Yeah, because Thiago Santos actually fought 5 times in 2018.
Yeah. It's got to be hard for these guys to build a fan base, too, like when nobody's noticing them because it's so watered down, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, go ahead, Keith.
No, I agree with that. It's I mean, I think a big thing too that goes into it is, like, first of all, like, the promotion really doesn't promote these guys, and I hope that now that the UFC's got the new ESPN deal, that ESPN, like you had said a little bit earlier, like, maybe ESPN will start backing the UFC a bit more, and since they're on a, you know, a network where people are watching all the major sports organizations play, then there'll be a lot more eyes in the UFC because of that. They'll want to, you know, give a better image to their fighters and really promote their guys, and not just the overall brand. I think the brand gets plenty of promotion, but the fighters within the brand, I think, is what needs more promotion.
Yeah.
Everybody knows about the UFC.
Yep.
You know, back a couple of years ago, if I mentioned the UFC to anybody, people only know the UFC by those tap-out shirts. Y'all seen those tap-out shirts that you have?
Yeah.
People only knew that but in the tap-out shirts. And that is so true. Even me at a certain age, I only knew about UFC through the tap-out shirts when I was like 10 years old. And the only fighter I knew was Chuck Liddell. That was I grew up – the first fighter I knew was Chuck Liddell. But a few years ago, they would still think that. But then now it's like at this point, everybody and everywhere I go is promoting the UFC. One of my favorite places, sports bars to go around my area, because I'm from Massachusetts, so we have Buffalo Wild Wings. I'm pretty sure Buffalo Wild Wings is widespread in the States. But, you know, they have a I've talked to servers there. They have a partnership deal kind of thing with the UFC where they play every UFC event. And they have, like, contracted to play every UFC event. And they pay, I think it's like a couple $100 to get it on all the TVs, you know, that they want. And it's not like boxing where you, like, pay per seat or you got to have a cover charge for people to get in or pay per TV. You know, they just pay one flat rate and they have it, you know, that's for every event. And they're not even allowed to play, like, I don't think Showtime boxing or certain boxing events because of that deal with UFC. It's just like, I feel like now it's become a lot more widespread. I just wish that at this point, you know, everybody would know the fighters more too, instead of just knowing the brand. Because, like, at this point, you know, everybody knows UFC, and when you say that, they say, "Oh, when's McGregor fighting again?" You know what I mean? Or maybe sometimes they might say, "Oh, well, what's happening with John Jones? Did he pop for steroids again?" That's the other thing that people say to me a lot. It's usually those two things when it comes to UFC, and it just, like, makes me shake my head because there's so many good fights that people have no idea about. You know, there's unbelievable fights that go way under the radar. I wish the UFC would promote some of the low-level guys that are actually high-level fighters. Well, a lot of them are low-level, but they're high-level fighters, because there's classic fights that are going to go down as some of the best UFC fights in history, and they're going to go completely unnoticed. The only people that are going to remember them are the avid fans like us, and many others, and then all the general audience has no idea that there's excellent fights going on they could be watching. Yeah, because one of the best fights of 2018 that I was talking about this with somebody the other day, and I said, is Yair Rodriguez versus the Korean Zombie. I think that was probably a top three fight in 2018 for me. That probably Robert Whittaker versus Yoel Romero too. And there's one more, probably Dustin Poirier and Justin Gaethje, or Eddie Alvarez and Justin Gaethje. That one, those three right there are probably, in some order, those are like the best fights. But one like Yair Rodriguez and Korean Zombie, people have no clue that happened, because it happened on a fighting card. That was better than these pay-per-view cards. These main events aren't even, half the main events in 2018 were probably not as good as that fight night card. People don't know how good the talent is, and I wish they just.
They don't even redirect. They don't even redirect people to fights that they missed. Like, they should redirect people's attention to fights that were missed. Like, I mean, and this is another way they could sell Fight Pass. I mean, which is like, I mean, Fight Pass is an awesome deal for $10. Like all the myriad of fights that you can get in the library and everything. I mean, and then like, and it's now they've got it to where it's like, it's only like, it's less than a month. And then like they put what, like the newest pay-per-view on and you're like,
sweet.
Wow. Like, I mean, it's like, I imagine like before, like I was going and I was like, I would wait like almost 2 months to be able to get a DVD like that, just to have it in my collection,
yeah.
You know? And now it's like, I mean, some of them, they pop up. It's like a month and a couple of days, or I've even seen it come on like sooner than a month. Bam, it's on. I'm like, sweet.
But you know where they sold that from, right? That Fight Pass is just, remember when
WWE
came on with the WWE Network? Yeah. So,
yep.
You know,
it's necessary, though. It's necessary,
yeah.
Though. They need it.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to have it definitely for the diehard fan. Probably not
yep.
for the casual fan, but for the diehard
yep.
fan, the Fight Pass, actually, me personally, I don't have it. But now listening to you talk about it and what you can do with it, I'll subscribe to it now.
Well,
but,
here's another
yeah,
thing you can
yeah,
do with it too,
too,
though. Check this out. You can go on, and, like, if you see, like, a fighter, you can actually go on, and one of the only places you can view these statistics is that, like, where you can see, like, what their takedown defense rate and percentage, their strike defense
uh-huh.
rate and percentage. Like, you can click on – you could put in a fighter's name and just pull up their profile, and it'll show – like their strikes landed percentage versus like, you know, missed. It show like, I mean, the whole deal. Cause I mean, I do DraftKings a little bit and like,
yeah,
I'll sit
we
there
do too.
And I go through it. I do Tapology. I do DraftKings. I do Verdict, you know, and I sit there and I'll go through and I'll really like, if I don't know who a fighter is, I'll go on and like try to find tape on them, watch a little tape.
So
they consider it, but they show those statistics though, that show their takedown and they show them versus the other fighter as well. So it's
yeah,
that's
awesome.
So they had a second level stats. Because a lot of people don't know about second level stats. I mean, you know, unless you're like a fantasy football fan, stuff like that, you know about second
yeah.
level stats. But the UFC, they really don't know about second level stats because basically when you go to the UFC website, you normally get, you know, significant strikes, takedown defense, takedowns landed, stuff like that. You get the
yep.
basic stats, but when you say something about boxing, and I've been telling my man Keys that I used to be the biggest boxing fan in the world back in the day, because boxing was you had the best fight the best. And sometimes
yep.
that fight man came on regular TV on ABC Sports, the Wild World of Sports, the Agony of Defeat, and
right.
all this. You know, boxing used to be that kind of sport. But now, the UFC, to a certain extent, guys, what turned me off to boxing is Floyd Mayweather and some of the newer boxers. They pick
yep.
and choose the guys they want to fight instead of fighting the guy that's next in line. Boxers now will relinquish a belt fighting the next guy. What kind of mess
yep.
is that? That you'd rather give up a belt than fight the next guy. And I look at
UFC does that now
coming
too.
That way a little bit. Because,
yeah.
you know, I'm looking at, I'll just throw this out here. This might be the wrong, it might be a bad example, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Okay, DC beat Stipe. Stipe
yep.
was the longest reigning heavyweight champion that we'd have had in, since probably Randy Couture.
Right.
He beats Stipe. The UFC, instead of granting Stipe an immediate rematch, or at least granting him a rematch, they was building up to DC versus Brock Lesnar. Brock.
Yeah.
Is, you know, he's in the USADA or whatever. So then DC, Derek Lewis, on 28 days after he just finished fighting, instead of just giving
yeah,
him a seat.
Yeah, that's so stupid.
So, to me, I blame the UFC and I kind of blame DC too, because DC basically, I think he handpicked his opponent. He handpicked Derrick Lewis, and he didn't want to fight Stipe. And then when he was the light heavyweight champion, Usman wasn't even ranked in the top five until he had one big win, and but he wouldn't fight Gustafson. It's like, man, come on, man. What we got to rank him for? So
you're exactly right.
I just don't want the UFC to become boxing 2.0, where guys pick and choose who they fight, where they fight, when they fight. I think the UFC needs to become more stringent on making the fights the fans want to see, and you know, having guys build their way up instead of talk their way up. Kobe Covington instead of talking their way up.
I think that scares me is WME, the management, that Hollywood management company that bought out Fertitta's. That is what worries me the most of anything, because the fact that it's Hollywood. And to me, it's like it's all got to be big, got to be glitz, got to be glam. And I'm kind of looking at like this whole super fight thing and then crapping on all these other fighters and in favor of these types of things might be because of that. And I really hope that I'm wrong, and I really hope it's just kind of maybe the semantics and the way that things are going, that they were just trying to fit in and build up big enough to where they could get the ESPN deal, you know what I mean? And maybe we'll go back to some kind of fairness and normalcy, but at the same time, that background.
Yeah. But
that WME thing
guys,
gets me.
But you do have guys that their name sometimes is always brought up with super fights instead of such big draws. You'll say that GSP, Conor McGregor. I would say John Jones, as far as if he decides to go up the heavyweight, I'll say him. Matt Holloway is the new super fight guy because he's a big guy at 145. And, I really think 155 is probably the best division for him. But you always big name guys be mentioned in super fights. And I think that's when the UFC, you know, if they're not a champion per se, you can make super fights. But if it's a champion, how do you defend his belt against somebody in a division? And just go from there. Just like with DJ. DJ cleaned out the flyweight division once, twice. And if DJ wanted to fight TJ Dillashaw, then the UFC owe him that. They could be like, okay, we'll let you fight TJ Dillashaw. But I always felt that if DJ, Keys, you can back me up on this. I always felt that guys, let's say if Max Holloway wanted to fight Tony Ferguson, do it at 150. Do it at a catch weight in between both. And then, then it's just for the spirit of competition and guys just want to fight each other. So a super fight don't have to be for a belt or a champ, stuff like that. Do it for the spirit of competition. If you do it for the spirit of competition, do it at a catch weight. Do it at probably 5 pounds.
Even then, they could make like a separate, not necessarily a belt, but like a title, like I did this, like an achievement, like a medal or something. They could come up with something that'd be like, I won the super fight, and then it could become a thing and be like, see who could win the most super fights. You know what I mean? Who collects this most super fight trophies or whatever?
Or they
could make it interesting.
Cash,
they just don't.
I think they could do cash prizes. I was reading earlier, they made like they could do cash prizes. I mean, they give all these fight of the night bonuses and stuff like that. Why not just, instead of doing two fight of the night bonus and then a knockout of the night bonus or whatever they do, do like one less, do one fight of the night bonus and then give the other 50K bonus to the winner of your, featured fight of the night, whatever, if it was going to be Holloway and Ferguson. Give the 50K to the winner of the featured super fight. I think that would be a really fun thing because you don't need two fight of the night bonuses. Like, and you could always be given, or you could lessen the amount, give the, make them smaller amounts. Like instead of, you could be given smaller bonuses for certain things and certain really good finishes to give more incentive to guys to actually perform. Cause a lot of these guys just want to, it sucks because they want to just fight so boring. Like some of the styles, yep. some of the styles lately, I don't know what's going on because guys are just, you know, like the Derek Lewis and Ngannou fight was just a snooze. I don't know what happened with that because neither guy wanted to even throw a punch. I don't even think one punch connected the whole fight, which was just terrible.
Yeah.
And then there's other fights too. I mean, like G and Vellante at light heavyweight fights really boring. I remember seeing him when at the Boston event, and that was a snooze. That guy fights extremely boring style as well. I mean, it's a lot of counterpuncher stuff and things like that. Like Stephen Thompson kind of appears to be boring, but really it's like he does have a handful of finishes on
high level karate,
the karate style.
That's just his way.
Yeah, yeah, the karate
high level karate.
And everything
just,
like
that's
that.
Just the way.
Yeah, yeah. So some of the stuff seems boring,
like you're saying incentives. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just give incentives to guys though, to go for that, you know, go for that finish or make the risky move to try and, you know, enhance the fight and wake the, you know, wake everybody up, and then people will remember the event a bit more. So give smaller prizes, like you can make like a, you know, change the $50,000 to a $30,000 prize, and you can give that to the, you know, the featured super fight of the night, and then divvy up the remaining $20,000 into like, you know, five grand each and give out like four of those for like, you know, certain things, like certain fighters for doing, you know, something. I don't know. You can even give it to people for making weight. Like if a guy doesn't miss weight for like so long, you could add something onto his purse. Because you see how they take money out of his purse?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I get it. Make a
very defined system of, okay, if you knock a dude out in the first round within the first 2 minutes, you get X amount of dollars. If a dude out in the second round, you know, within this much time, you get X amount of extra dollars. You know what I mean? Something very specific. If you drop a Google Plata on a guy, like one of the most difficult submissions, this Ezekiel choke this guy does, this type of thing that's like really technical and insane, if you do this, we're going to give you X amount of dollars. Like something like really put it in there. Make it crazy
like
to where people go, wow, I'm going to do this.
I think it's called a Von Flew choke that
Prue
does in the light heavyweight division.
Yeah.
That's a strange looking.
Yeah.
He's like the only guy in the UFC that does that, I'm pretty sure. It's a really strange looking thing.
Yeah.
Like that thing is really cool when he does win by submission, you know. I'm going to look that up.
You know, but make it specific.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But at the same time, though, you know, with all the incentives and stuff like that, my major gripe, and boy, Keys, I know you get tired of me saying this, is I want to see the judges' scorecards after each round. I want to see exactly, you know, what each judge is looking at. Because me as a fan, I know like me and Keith, when we watch a fight or if we text each other during fights, you know, Keith might score it one way and I might score it another way. And it all depends on what we consider aggression or octagon control or, you know, this or that. But a lot of these refs, man, it seems like they do that scorecard, and then at the end, it's like they might go back and change or replay around their head or something like that. But if you make them show us their scorecards at the end of every round, we can get a better feel of what a judge is looking at or what they consider to be more important to them. Maybe one judge, he likes significant strikes. Then you might have another judge that puts more emphasis on takedowns. And it gives you, at the end of the fight, we ain't like, I can't believe this guy won this fight. I can't believe the judge is quarter this way. And that's something that I'm an advocate of. And I think it'll make the judges more accountable, but at the same time, it gives us a fan more insight into how they're watching the fight.
Yep. If I were asked to repair the judging system, I think what they absolutely want, you know about fight metrics, like where they count everything. They count octagon control time. They count significant strikes, total strikes, all these things. I think there should be people ringside. I think one person's job should be constantly timing who is pushing forward, you know what I mean, and being the pressure guy. And whenever it switches, they switch and they time it back and forth. It's one person's job. And then one, you know what I mean, and then the significant strikes. Every single thing that you could do, that you could take into account, this person, there should be one person for this job, and they should be entering the information into a computer. And then that computer, which is the fight metric, okay, at the end, there are only two human judges and one computer judge. And at the end of it, bing, 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 and that's it. And I think that is a really – I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe there's somebody smarter than me that could tell me, no, you're wrong, and this is why. But I think that this is – in the age of technology that we have, I think that they could come up with these algorithms and everything we would need to really, have the human factor, but also just have the statistical factor straight up. That's it. That's all. Good night, gentlemen.
All right, let me ask you two a question real quick. Do you think octagon control is really that important? Because
I think pressuring –
But see, there's a difference between pressuring and octagon control, because sometimes some fighters fight better with their back against the cage, and then you got guys that, let's say Kobe against RDA. Kobe was pressuring him from the time they came out of every between corner breaks, every time they came out, he was pressuring him. He was backing RDA up the whole fight. And then once RDA kind of like, I think he cracked him one time, and Kobe kind of like at the beginning of the next round, he didn't come out like full blast. He came out kind of cautious or whatever. But his pressure kind of like forced RDA into, backtracking a lot. But I heard a lot of stuff about octagon control. Octagon control, if you look at the John Jones versus Dustin last fight, John basically was never, ever had octagon control. He was always on the outside with Dustin on the inside. And to me, Dustin never really gained an advantage because he had octagon control. So I think octagon control.
But it also didn't go to a decision either, though, so none of it matters.
No.
And another thing too, what I'm talking, let me elaborate what I was saying before. There will be algorithms involved where everything I was talking about that will be recorded would have its own value in the computer. The computer would say, okay, this, and there would be a perfect, because they're the math doesn't lie. And if there are people smarter than all of us put together, that can do the math and build that computer program to say, that octagon control or pressuring is only worth this much, and then this is worth this much, and then the computer at the end would run the algorithm and decide that this person won. You know what I mean? And it would all be math. There would be none of the – because another thing you have to think about, too, is no matter what, they're all humans. And, there could be – no matter what, out of those three judges, there is one of those judges that does not like one of those fighters, and it has – no one is true to being just impartial. You know what I mean? There's something, if they're not paying any, you would have to be like, don't watch any of the interviews. Don't watch them talk. Don't watch them walk out in the way their antics or anything. And then watch the fight in order for that to be totally pure. You know what I mean? And because no matter what, you're making judgments. These people are looking at, like a Colby Covington. He's really hard to like. I mean, with all his crap. So it's like the more you watch him, you know what I mean? No matter what, it's like, how do you be impartial to somebody like that? I can't stand Conor McGregor. After he was like, oh, bring God down here, I'll whoop him too. I was like, okay, dude. And it sucks because I'm half Irish, and my family is real proud of their Irish. And so when he first came out, I was like, yeah, an Irish fighter, yeah. And then the more he ran his mouth, the more I was like, come on,
man. Hey, man, don't talk about, you know, hey, man, you're talking about King's boy, man. Hey, don't do that, man. I'm talking about
it hurt me.
Boy like that.
It hurt me. Like, I'm not. This is
well,
me personally. I don't have anything. If you want to support him, support him. But, like,
you have James Gallagher and Bellator, too. You see James Gallagher?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, James Gallagher is from Ireland, too.
Yeah.
Watch him fight?
Yep. I like Paddy Pimblett. No, I mean, yeah, James Gallagher's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the whole thing, I don't know, you know, going, getting in the face and all that. I mean, I'm an old Chuck fan and a Vitor fan originally. Like, they were, you know, like, come out and do your thing. You know what I mean? If you want to say something edgewise, whatever, cool. Chuck, I still go back to Chuck. That's it. Hey, I'm going to knock him out. In his heyday, he did. He didn't talk a whole bunch of crap. He just said, hey, I'm going to knock him out. That's it. I don't care. Whatever. I'm going to knock him out. And now these guys, the friggin' antagonism, like, oh, I've got to run my mouth and antagonize the other guy. And this whole value of mental warfare, I'm like, come on, man. You know what? I don't pay any of that any mind. I don't care what you're saying. You know what? You can say whatever you want about me. It does not affect me any day. I don't care what you have to say about me, ever.
Bro,
these guys are
the keys buttons right now, man. You're
talking bad
about Conor McGregor.
On the planet.
And then you're talking about mental warfare. Oh, man, keys.
Yeah, but no, but here's the thing, though. No, here's the thing, though.
If you're solid, then people's words aren't shit.
The thing is this. So, everybody, hold on. I've been listening to y'all. Please. All right, so the thing is this, is that if you look at Cowboy Cerrone, you know, Donald Cerrone, if you look at him, one thing to observe about this is that if you notice every time that he has a fight and you see them at the face-off, and any guy who he's fought pretty much that was friendly to him and it was respectful, more times than not, he wins the fight, or he always wins the fight. Then the guys
because
who
he's
have
mentally
been in his
weak.
Face,
okay,
right, but that doesn't nullify the fact that it exists. Though I'm saying for certain fighters, it is a big factor. So if you're gonna go in there and fight Cowboy Cerrone, people see that. It's like when he fought, you know, his last few fights when he fought. The only time where that's been proven wrong was this most recent time, because he fought Mike Perry, this guy Mike Perry, and Mike Perry was kind of in his face and he wasn't super disrespectful,
but
he was doing a lot.
Principle thing. He had to win that fight because of the Winklejohn thing, though. No matter what happened and who he was facing in that moment, he wasn't fighting Mike Perry. He was fighting Mike Winklejohn. He wasn't in that fight.
Yeah, that's the point.
He was not fighting Mike Perry. Mike Perry did not matter. You didn't. Whoever he would put in there against, he would have. He wanted to win so bad just so he could beat Winklejohn. That's it. And that's the drama there. My thing is, if you want to say some shit as wise, sure. But when you build your entire persona and everything you are, I can't participate as a fan at that point. I'm like, okay.
I respect
that. Come on. But be humble. Like, I want to see, like, you know, at certain points, like, before Vitor was disgraced, he used to say the most inspiring, like, awesome things in interviews, like, that were just like, wow. I just was so, he's so great, man. Like, wow, what an awesome thing to say to build people up and to see you win, and you can feel and build upon that before his disgrace. But and then it's that cool, calm, collected thing that Iceman had. Like, I'm so into that. But now all these young guys, just the antagonism nonstop. It's like, okay, you've given me all this. Can you tone it down a little bit and just be freaking cool for once? You know, it gets old. Like, and it's to me is like, and then like when you start to see after McGregor, when we start to see, you know, the Kevin Lees and F being humble after he just got his ass handed to him by Iaquinta. I'm like, come on, man. Come on, young man. You can do better than that. You don't have to be that antagonistic and all that craziness all the time. Be inspiring. Be like, have that champion thing. But be a champion.
Gone, bro. Them days are gone, man.
All right.
I don't know, man. Look at Robert Whittaker and these guys, man.
But guys now are more into being right or being wrong, building brands. They all about branding themselves and getting followers and stuff like that. So the only way you can build a brand is to try to separate yourself from everybody else. And if I'm gonna pose this question to my man Keys real quick. Keys, how did you feel about the Kobe Covington interview this week? Because I know me and you definitely haven't been Kobe Covington fans. And, you know, a lot of people on Twitter this week were really, like, going to bat for Kobe Covington. And I just don't figure out – I can't figure out why. What has he done to garner all this fanfare? How does it feel about that, Keith? I know we've gone over, so we probably got about 5 minutes, but – go ahead, man. How did you feel about the Kobe Covington situation?
First of all, I want to thank Will for calling into our show. We appreciate your call, brother.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me. Anytime, let me know. And, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks, bro.
Well, I look forward to you calling in and talking with us again soon. We're going to wrap it up in our final minutes, and then we're going to close it down for the night because we're already over time.
Cool,
so. I appreciate your call.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah, man.
Hey, thanks, Will, man. Have a good evening, bro. Hit us up. We're going to be back on Saturday. We haven't found out. We don't know what time yet. And Saturday is going to be a real interesting show.
Yeah, definitely. But the thing is for Kobe, I kind of put it more on the UFC because really, like, I didn't listen to the whole thing, but just a few minutes of what he was saying. And I just feel like it goes back to the interim title fight. Like, really, the UFC put him in this position to be able to do everything that he's doing. So they created that pedestal and they put him on that platform and they raised him up. So I feel like the UFC kind of, they accelerated with Kobe. And they thought that he was going to be big and they wanted him to be like a new star. And then something must have happened along the lines that made them change their mind, and now it's like they're backtracking on him. Because the way he made it sound like, well, with the interim title fight in the first place, Kobe said that he was supposed to get cut from the UFC, win or lose. I don't know if it was the Damian Maia fight or the interim title fight. He said win or lose, he was supposed to get cut. So I don't understand what happened with that, and then why he ended up getting an interim title fight. I'm just really confused about that part, but I guess I put it more on the UFC because they gave him that platform to be able to talk all that talk and do what he's doing. So now that they put him up and he was like the number one contender, you know, the interim champion is supposed to fight the official champion, and that didn't happen. Now they gave the shot to another guy who's also deserving of a title shot, but it's just like what they just did by doing that is even further invalidating the interim title belt, because you held the interim title fight as the co-main event of one of your cards last year, you know, basically just to hype up the event, not to give any sort of legitimacy to an interim title. You did it, and then now the interim champion is not even fighting the actual champion. And I know there's been road bumps along the way that may have contributed to that, but still, I think the UFC should commit to their guys. And if you're going to do an interim title fight, whoever wins that should prioritize them fighting the champion at some point. Like, I feel like if he sticks around, then after this fight that's going down, they should still put Kobe in that place just to keep the legitimacy of the interim belt. Even if you don't want to do it because you don't respect him as a number one contender, that's one thing, but I'm saying the UFC should probably do it just to keep the legitimacy of the interim belt, because other than that, it looks like they're just throwing out interim belts just to hype up a fight and not for what it's really made for. So that's how I feel about that.
But you know, Mick, I think that the UFC kind of like burnt their bridge with him when he was supposed to fight Woodley, and then he went and had surgery, and they had to put Darren Till in there. And then as soon as that Darren Till-Woodley fight started, they stripped him of the interim belt. Because it was like all of a sudden he needed surgery. We was like, man, when did he need the surgery? I mean, we didn't even know he was injured or anything like that. And, you know, he had been talking all this smack. So then when the UFC wanted to go make the fight, and I remember me and you were both like, Darren Till. We were both like, Darren Till, what happened? And then we ended up hearing that he had to have nasal surgery or whatever after he done took the belt to the White House and all this and all that. So I think he burned his bridges when he didn't take that fight, and the UFC just moved on to the next. And then with Usman being, well, I can say, man, dominant in his last couple fights compared to Kobe, I think they made the right decision. And I think Kobe is just, he's one of them guys that talked his way into an opportunity. It was an unwarranted opportunity because me and you both said that fight should not have been for an interim title fight. And that interim title fight ended up basically getting him screwed. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I understand that. You know, there's definitely a couple different ways to look at it. I mean, the way that he kind of fell out with the opportunity to fight Woodley in Dallas, and then how Woodley ended up having to have they had to have Darren Till jump in there. That I think that whole thing played a major part in where we're at now, because they wanted him. They really wanted him to fight on that card, and I don't think that they really took the surgery that he needed that seriously, which is. It's kind of messed up in a way. If a guy needs to get surgery, I mean, it's kind of messed up, like, for the president of the organization to just say, like, that's a bogus injury. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's kind of not fair to the fighters. Like, if they feel like it's, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's a lot of moving parts with it. But, you know, him not, you know, competing at UFC Dallas versus Woodley, I think messed up a lot for him. And then, you know, he said he signed a contract to fight in New York. I think they tried to get it for the Madison Square Garden, and then maybe Woodley needed surgery after that. So it's just been like the typical back and forth. Like, you know, there's always just something with either side that doesn't work out. You know, I've seen this many, many times, and I don't know. I think there's been many things that have led to the place that he's at, but it does just give kind of a bad look to an interim belt. I think in the future, if they don't end up giving him the shot after this and he kind of just loses his status and maybe even moves to another organization or whatever, or he gets stripped or whatever happens, you know, I think in the future what the UFC just needs to work on is not making interim title fights if you don't want to back the people that are in the interim title fights. Like, if you're not going to, you know, back the interim champion or whatever, if you think that, you know, he might think he needs surgery or something happens, you should just call it off right there and just, you know, prolong everything. Because even after the time, you know, he became interim champion, then he needed nasal surgery, then now it's been 1, 2, 3, 4 months, you know, something like that. And he's still the interim champion. You know, if you go look at the rankings, it still says Kobe Covington, you know, number one interim champion. So I just don't get why they would keep promoting him as the interim champion in a way, by having it on their website and such like that, and keeping it in everyone's mind that he's the interim champion. If you didn't, you know, you should have just and otherwise stripped him of that belt just to be able to shift the focus and maintain the division. So I think the UFC just needs to move smarter. I think that's the answer to all of it.
Yeah. And also I think if, you know, if Kobe decides to leave, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it because I really don't think he's that good. I don't think the UFC will be losing a star. I think the UFC will be losing a mini Conor McGregor who's trying to use Conor McGregor's style to benefit him. And my thing is, if he required nasal surgery, why he didn't get it done immediately after the RDA fight? Because let's be real, he didn't take that much damage in that fight. He didn't even take that much damage in that fight, so he could have had his nasal surgery done right after the RDA fight, and then he would have been ready for the Dallas event to fight Woodley. And I think that's the part that soured the UFC on him. But not to kick a dead horse, you know, I know we're running over. Any closing words, Keys?
I think I'm all set. I think we we got through a lot of topics tonight, and I think we're all spent. I don't really got nothing to say except, you know, everybody stay positive and just know that the power of your mind, you know, you have a lot more control over your reality. You have a lot more control over your reality than you like to believe. You know, whatever you perceive and think about in your mind is what will manifest in your life. And what you think in your mind, if it's negative, is also going to manifest in your life. So think negative and you're going to live negative and you're going to feel negative. So think positive, you're going to feel positive and see positive. So that would be my closing words, is just to, you know, throw that advice out there. And everybody, stay happy, stay positive, and just live your life and enjoy everything.
All right, episode 81, dedicated to Terrell Owens, one of the greatest that ever did it, who wore the number 81. You know, also sending a rest in paradise to my Aunt Brenda, to my family, that if you listen, I'll see you guys on Sunday. I touched down 2 o'clock. Let's have some fun. Let's remember her life. Let's celebrate her life. And to everybody out there, and let's listen to the show. Like my man Key said, and you know, stay positive. Always say positive people with positive energy always yield positive results. And in closing, peace.